welcome along to the Daggers and Lids podcast. I'm Charles Dagnall in my tip of an office here in the UK, unshaven, even haven't done my hair, and out in the United Arab Emirates doing sterling work with both the Sky coverage and the BBC coverage is Lydia Greenway. And we have got much to talk about. We are bang in the middle of the Women's World T20. The last time we spoke, we actually just did the first two games that we spoke about and then recorded a podcast. So much has happened since then. Before we get into the nitty-gritty of it, how are you? You've got some time off. You've been working like a mad thing. Have you had time to take a breath even?
Yeah, I have actually, Daggers. Yeah, I have to admit, the first week has been quite full on. There's been a few back-to-back games. There's also been a few double headers, which you know what it's like working on the 100. You just finish one game and then have to get your head quite quickly around the next game. But it's been really good, you know. Have seen lots of teams to sort of see where they're at, which has been nice. And have had a little bit of time yesterday where a few of us hired some bikes and went out for a bike ride, which the timing was a little bit late. It was a bit too hot, I have to admit, Daggers.
I was going to ask, riding bikes is fine, I imagine, in Dubai if the sun has set.
Well,
given the temperature, when did you do it and how hot was it?
Well, the first time I went out, I went out with the Siva Brunts and we negotiated because they like their sleep. I prefer getting up early. So my initial time of meeting at 7:30 was negotiated to 9:00. So we went out then, which was actually okay. But yesterday I went out at 11:30. So we were cycling in midday, hottest condition. So we actually got an Uber back in the end. We learnt the lesson, Daggers. We're going to be staying in the aircon.
The intention was good, though. I understand the intention. but I mean, that was bold.
Yes.
I have to say, that's a very, very bold strategy to get your exercise in the Dubai heat.
Yeah, so this morning was the air-conditioned gym. So, yeah, but no, it's all been good, thanks, Daggers. And how about you? You've been, a little bit of exciting news on your front.
Well, a small amount, yes. Even though generally speaking, I'm very dull and boring because I've been watching the Women's World T20, which is exciting to watch. But actually having a personal life, no, I've got very little going on. Apart from we have a new arrival arriving at the Dagnall residence, at Dagnall Towers. And me and my partner Asher, we're going on holiday to the States. We're going to do Route 66.
Oh, amazing.
In a couple of weeks' time. So we're going to be driving from Chicago to LA. We're on, by the way, we're there when the American election is on and stuff.
Oh, wow.
We're wondering how that's going to go to all pan out. We're thinking of, well, we land in Chicago and then we fly back from LA. It's 2,500 miles where we're going to be taking in Chicago, Kansas City, Oklahoma. I say taking in, we're stopping there and then we're carrying on driving. Amarillo. So do we know the way to Amarillo?
Is this the way? Yes.
It is the way. Albuquerque. We're going to go to the Grand Canyon. All of this is planned. Whether we actually do it or not, whether we make it on time. But my schedule, I think, is very, very good. I'm very sort of organized that way. Las Vegas, Palm Springs, and LA for a couple of nights. So it's an adventure. We're going on an adventure. And we're thinking that when we land in Chicago, we'll both wear blue hats. And then out of Chicago, we'll put a red one on. And then we get back into Los Angeles, we'll put blue ones back on.
Good
again.
Idea.
So we don't get killed. And we sort of, given the areas that we're traveling and we sort of make friends with people. But after we return back, we are having a new addition to Dagnall Towers. And Blue the Labradoodle is going to be part of the family. It's very cute.
Yeah, I've seen pictures.
Yeah, he's a very cute Labradoodle. He's 3 or 4 weeks old at the moment, so he'll be sort of 8 weeks when by the time we pick him up. I don't think we've realised and taken into consideration how much this is going to complicate the hell out of our lives, and how little attention I will actually get within the house. Yes. from my partner Asher, from stepson Lucas, and from my daughter Beatrix. I will become a non-entity within this house, which is kind of a good and bad thing. I can stay in my office and play my instruments and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But I can tell you for now that all of the crap jobs I'll be doing.
Literally
taking it out for its walks when it's raining and wintry and horrible, picking up all of its defecations and going to take it to the vet. Meanwhile, when it's time to go, oh, who wants a baby? Yeah. That's going to be next.
Yeah.
But we are going to take it to training. I found a local training school and stuff like that. So basically, it can, sit when told, stand, come when told, wee when it's told, and eventually, when we get to advanced training, sort of perform nuclear fusion.
Yes.
That would be great. That would be, you know. That's the hope. So, yes, very exciting.
It's exciting.
Very, very, very expensive.
Yes.
I'm sure it will end up being. We'll be on sort of beans on toast while the dog's eating sensational food. But, yes, that is the news from me. Otherwise, all is well in our world. So, let's crack on. With the news kind of thing, and there's not been a great deal of news coming out of the Women's World T20. It's just the results that have happened. Now, when we left you last time, we did the opening first two games. That was Bangladesh beating Scotland and Pakistan overcoming Sri Lanka. Then a couple of the sort of bigger teams, and by that I mean in the women's game, the stronger teams met each other. South Africa demolished the West Indies. I mean, they really handled them by 10 wickets. Wolfhampton Brits knocking off the 119 needed to win. They did that with two and a bit overs to spare. I'm going to come back to New Zealand versus India. Australia easily slipped past Sri Lanka. England again with Bangladesh. They were a little rusty, but they managed to get the win. Then India beat Pakistan comfortably. West Indies beat Scotland comfortably. And England then beat South Africa. That was in the last over of the game, but they won by 7 wickets. Australia then beat New Zealand by 60 runs. South Africa hammered Scotland. And India beat Sri Lanka. So that's basically where we are at this moment in time. So I'm going to talk about individually those games, or three of the games within that list,
yeah.
And then talk a little bit more generally from things that you have seen. But I'm going to kick off with the game that I think has really opened up this Women's World Cup, and that's actually in Group A, with India being defeated by New Zealand. Mm. New Zealand at 160 for 4. Sophie Devine batted beautifully in that 57 off 36. There were contributions. Georgia Plimmer got
yes.
34 from 23. And in response, India were scuttled out in 19 overs for a grand total of 102, New Zealand winning by 58 runs. Now, some would say that this is an upset. I think this is a big upset, given the run that New Zealand had been on, given the, you know, how much India have been bigged up ahead of the tournament, and rightly so when you go down that order. What was the reaction out there with you guys, because you were doing this game?
Yeah, I mean, it was exactly the same as what you've just said. People couldn't quite believe it, for the reason of New Zealand being in really poor form coming into this World Cup, and the fact that India would have been the other side who would have probably been up there with people saying, actually, this could be their year. This could be the year that India win the World Cup. Obviously, their men's side had done it over in the Caribbean and USA. And so that momentum, that excitement of these massive names from India, being potentially the next people to pick up that trophy. But yeah, the game itself, I mean, Sophie Devine was unbelievable. That's probably the best that she has batted for a long, long time in T20 cricket, because of the conditions and because of the situation, really. Obviously, yeah, your first game in a World Cup, you want to get off to that winning start, and they did that really well. As you say, Georgia Plimmer, who had been run out three or four times in England and really just couldn't settle in at the top of the order. I don't think she had opened in the warm-up games, but I think that was down to injury, because it was Mealy Kerr who was actually opening in the warm-up games. And when I looked at that, I thought, oh, that's interesting. They're going a different way. But I think it was because of injury to, no, it must have been Georgia Plimmer. But yeah, India just looked like they weren't quite ready, or they weren't expecting New Zealand to post the total they did. Mm-hmm. And so I think if they were playing someone like Australia, they were probably more, would have been more prepared to have maybe leaked 160 runs and then thought, right, well, now we're going to have to go and chase them. But because it was New Zealand, it felt like they were a bit rabbit in headlights, because they were like, whoa, how did that just happen? So yeah, they got themselves in a right pickle, I have to admit, Daggers. And then obviously the game against Pakistan.
Yeah, the thing is with this is, now, given the nature of how this World Cup, you've only got four pool games, and then you're straight into the semi-finals. And you know that generally, well, there's a couple of things about this, but they really have given themselves a lot to do. Basically, to have any chance of making the semi-finals, they've got to go now and beat Australia.
Yeah. And do you know what? That's why, even more intriguingly, their second game was had a lot of chat about it, because they were playing Pakistan. Pakistan posted 105, and that was a really good opportunity for India to say, right, let's chase this in, I don't know, 15, 16 overs and get back on track with our net run rate. But we were sitting there watching it, and there was just not much intent at all. Shefali Verma went at a run a ball pretty much, 32 off 35. Smriti Mandana, 7 off 16. And they just, whether they were worried that they were going to lose that game, so therefore then they would just be completely out of it, or they just didn't read the situation very well. But they've obviously... they've obviously gone back to winning ways now, and they've been pretty dominant. So even so, because it still leaves that group really, really open.
Well, it does indeed. And you would argue that Australia, in the form that they are in at the moment, in this moment in time, are gonna win against everybody. That would be the way it looks. Australia and India have got a game coming up. Australia versus New Zealand. Now, we saw New Zealand, obviously... We saw them beat India. I was tearing my hair out in watching Australia versus New Zealand. In that, Australia, now they scored a decent total, 148 for 8, one of the higher totals of the tournament.
Yeah.
Not completely beyond the realms of New Zealand, but one of the things that I find frustrating about New Zealand, and yes, they did play really, really well against India.
Mm.
But their general form has not been good, and I don't think that they sort of read the situation correctly in this instance. Australia making 148 for 8, it was a good score without it being an exceptional score, but on that surface, in that stadium in Sharjah, you know, I think it's a pretty steady total.
Yes.
What really blew my mind for New Zealand is, after Sophie Devine has got 50-odd or 57 or 30-odd balls, and this is the best side in the world, your only opportunity to try and get a win or at least keep yourself in the game is scoring runs in the power play.
Yeah.
New Zealand were 54 for 1 off 10.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking, this is great. You've not lost a wicket. Now you need to go at nines against Australia in Sharjah. And I don't think there's enough adaptability, and this is not just in New Zealand, but maybe even, like you say, with India in that in the country over Pakistan. Reading the situation, we need to go out and make a statement and go and hammer in Pakistan if you're India. And like you said, win it in 15, 16 overs, get our net run rate on, and then go right, bang, put the pressure and the onus on the opposition.
Yeah.
And I think the only way that Australia would have been beaten or even close to being beaten is if the line goes off at the top of the order.
Yeah.
Right? And that puts a bit of pressure. So say New Zealand are 50 off the power play.
Yeah.
So, something like that. And you then remain at a run a ball. That's the only chance. You've got to put the pressure back on Australia. And I don't understand New Zealand's approach.
Yeah.
I found it really frustrating because as soon as you're 50 for one off 10 overs, game's gone.
Yeah.
Game's gone. If you need 9 and over against Australia, you've got to try and keep it to a run a ball.
Yeah.
And if you manage to get 5-6 boundaries from the back of Devine, who's your most likely candidate in New Zealand, that's going to be your option. So sometimes you just think they're a little bit tactically naive.
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably back that up as well. We're saying from a selection point of view, a question is, did they get it quite right? So if you look at England in Sharjah, they've gone in with four spinners. They haven't really got a frontline seamer. Nat Siverbrunt, who can more than do a job with the new ball. They obviously have Danny Gibson as well. But with New Zealand, they went with two frontline seamers in Leah Tahuhu and Rosemary Mare. And then they did have spin options. They had three spin options in Fran Jonas, Carson and Kerr. But that was all. And so if I look at that team and I think, right, what changes are we going to make? Take out Tahuhu or Mare and bring in Lee Kasparic, because Kasparic bowls slow and she can turn the ball a little bit. And on those pitches, when we've been doing the analysis on the game, it's been the lack of pace that has been so effective. So, yeah, for New Zealand, a tough time of it in that game against Australia. They've obviously got world-class players in there, but it's just how can they piece it all together, as you say, and just get up to where they need to be.
Find it really, really difficult why they're not playing Lee Kasparic. But not only does she doesn't turn it a huge amount, but what she does, she has the ability to actually turn it both ways as well. She's got that little carom ball that she bowls. And she's very, very accurate. Now, again, I find that a really, really strange. And seeing what the trend is on surfaces such as that. So very, very odd. Let's talk England.
Yes.
Because and this is not for want of not talking about Scotland. We will mention them briefly in a moment, but we're going to talk England because they obviously won in a sort of, you know, they managed to get their type of way against Bangladesh. They were always going to win against Bangladesh.
Yeah.
Did they do everything correctly? No, but does that get them into the tournament? Yes. Against South Africa, where South Africa made 124 for 6. England knocked them off 125 for 3 with 4 balls remaining. It sounds closer than I actually thought it was. If you look at the scores and how many balls were left, I think this was a very, very impressive performance by England.
It was brilliant.
Apart from the catches, two of which are half chances, harsh maybe from me, but they're chances.
Yeah.
Apart from their catching, I thought this was a very, very good performance.
Yeah, it was. Because, just to put into context, their performance in the first game, I thought they were 10, 15 runs under par. They came out of the power play. They only went at 5 runs and over in those middle overs. And if it wasn't for the last two, which went for 21 runs, that could have been a much tighter game against Bangladesh. But they did really well to turn it around. So just talking specifically about that game, Danny Wyatt again was brilliant. How good has she been just to change that mentality of naturally within her, she wants to go after things, she wants to get going. But for her to play the conditions well, read the situation as well as she did, she's been brilliant for them. And then Nat Siverbrunt, who for me, has played the innings, not of the tournament because there's already been so many, but for England so far, that has been the best innings that I've seen. It was impressive.
Big players turn up in big games.
Yes.
And she has just come on. or come out of there, and you know, they rise to an occasion like this to sort of say, right, I'm going to be here winning this game for you. Yes. This is what my job. Someone on Twitter got in touch with me. I can't remember what they said. They said basically, that Maya Bouchier was faffing about at the top, and Danny White and Nat Silverbrook are saving England. I'm like, no, this is their job. This is what they do. This is, you know, Maya Bouchier got a little bit stuck in the mud. And I think she has to find an approach that works a little bit. You can't keep patting back. In the power play, the power play is absolutely everything, especially in Charger. And you've got to try and make the most of it. And so you've got to take some risk. You absolutely have to take some risk. You know, bowlers are going to be bowling straight to you. So what are your options? Where are your scoring options? And look, everyone finds that out about certain conditions, and if they're alien to you, you've got to adapt, but you've got to adapt quick in a World Cup. Nat Silverbrunk came out and went, this is how you play it. And went, boosh, bosh, you know, just little paddles, little manoeuvring of the field, running them hard with Danny Wyatt. And I thought that was those two in partnership. That's the thing, and people are not, when you're looking at that, oh, you need Nat Silverbrunk to save. No, that's their job. That's what they're paid to do. That's why they're in demand in franchise cricket around the world. And that's, I thought one interesting thing of South Africa in that Marizan Kapp was dismissed with the first ball in the 18th over. And that, I thought, was an enormous wicket. Just for the fact, A, it's Marizan Kapp, and again, personal opinion, I would have a batting three. I don't know why I don't know why Annika Bosch is batting three. You know, decent player, but Marizan Kapp, then you've got Annerie Dirksen, then you've got Chloe Tryon. I think that engine room is really, really powerful. Get them in there. You know, Wolfhart Brits, then Kapp, Dirksen and Tryon. And if they don't get them, then fair enough. You know, you're probably not going to be winning the game. But I would be tempted to throw Kapp in that situation. And had she stayed with Dirksen for two overs, that 125 could well have been 140. And we're talking about a different game. Sophie Eccleston it was who was bowling the penultimate over, getting the wicket first ball. And I think that actually may have well won the game for England, that dismissal then.
Yeah, it pulled it back as well, I think. Eccleston was 2 for 15 off her four, but I was with you, Dad, because I thought exactly the same when England got Kapp. I thought that was a massive moment because she was looking in form. But they should have got 140 plus without a doubt, and it would have been much closer. As it stands, obviously South Africa in their group, where are they? They're top, but they've got a game in hand. Whereas England are obviously 2 from 2 with Scotland and the West Indies to play. So Scotland actually against England, that's a really big game for England, because even if they win, it doesn't necessarily mean that they qualify for the semi-finals. I was chatting to our analyst today. So I think that they just need to see that as get a win, and if you can, try and get a convincing win as well. It is still, I mean, there's things that can happen which might not happen, like the West Indies pulling off a couple of big results, but you just never know, do you?
Absolutely. Well, we are going to be talking about the rest of the games to come, just in a little bit of a preview, and also what Lids has thought about the overview of the competition, things that she's noticed during the last week and a half. But she has also been very busy for the Daggers and Lids podcast. Time to hear from Sarah Glenn. Lids caught up with her ahead of that game against Scotland.
Firstly, Sarah, thank you for joining us on the Daggers and Lids podcast. Just first of all, tell us how you've been finding Dubai. You've obviously been here a while. You've been in Abu Dhabi for a few days and now in Dubai. How is it?
Yeah, we're loving it as a group. I think for a lot of us, it's our first time here as well. Just kind of been seeing the sights, been at the mall a lot of shopping. It's just been great to be around. Obviously, I was in Abu Dhabi for a little bit with the prep camp, which was really good. So, yeah, all good, really.
And on the pitch, we stick with the theme of the location and also the heat. Like, how have you guys been finding it? Obviously, you and Scotland are the two teams who are probably least equipped to deal with it. How's it been?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a few red faces in that game, to be honest. Yeah, obviously it was really tough when we first got out here. But that was kind of the benefit of coming out here a little bit early. We had time to kind of get used to it and drink a bit more water than we're probably used to. So yeah, I think it's just like tactically just trying to stay cool as we can. But obviously we want to get out and about, and obviously at the top of your mark when you're under pressure, like just dealing with that when the heat's getting to you. So yeah, just kind of been getting used to it really. It's getting a bit easier, but not gonna lie, each training session's really tough. So yeah.
And you've had two games already, you're 2 from 2. That must be pretty pleasing for the whole camp.
Yeah, definitely. I think also the two games were a bit different as well. I felt like our first game was a bit scrappy, but we got over the line, which is the main thing. And then the second game, we felt more of like a team performance. So I feel like we're ticking along nicely, and we're just taking each game as it comes, really.
And Sharjah has been where you've had your first few games. You've then got Scotland there in just a few days' time as well. You've been playing four spinners. Obviously, Lindsay Smith has come in and Lauren Bell has sat out. How has that been as the four of you as a group sort of working together? Because you've been dominant within those middle overs and also in the power play as well.
Yeah, it's been great. I think, obviously, we are four spinners, but we just bowl so differently from each other.
Yeah.
And obviously, like, it's been great to see Lindsay back in the side in the T20 World Cup. So, and she's been doing really well, obviously, and yeah, I feel like our communication on and off the field has been really good. And obviously the conditions are always kind of just changing a little bit here and there. And obviously we play against different people as well. So we've just been feeding that off each other really and working together as a unit, even though we all bowl something different, which has been really nice.
Yeah. One word that you mentioned there was communication.
Yeah.
And something that I know you guys did, I think it was after the T20 World Cup South Africa, you had some time up at the Lake District.
Yeah.
So just explain a bit more behind that, because from what I gather, chatting to people like Heather and obviously the head coach, John Lewis, it was about actually trying to communicate better under pressure. So just give us a bit more insight into how that was.
Yeah, it was a bit cold in the Lake District, but so that was a challenge. But yeah, no, it was really good. Basically, we took up to the lakes and we just kind of got put under pressure. Very different scenarios, kind of at the edge of a cliff or down like this river where there's a few drops here and there. So a little bit different to batting and bowling. But again, you had that anxiety, you know, come in, and basically we had to, the challenge was to communicate clearly under those circumstances. And obviously, as you know, in cricket, there's always that pressure, and it's so easy to kind of speak about it after the game and almost when it's too late. And I think those little moments in cricket is what it's all about. Those like one percenters, just that little conversation can change a lot. So yeah, we got put under pressure with that, and it was really tough. But you know, we went a second time and it got a little bit easier, and we got pushed a little bit harder, and it was, you know, and now we're in such a good place that kind of we're so kind of logical with our thinking and being able to communicate under pressure. And at first we kind of had to force ourselves to do it because it wasn't that natural, but now it's just becoming more and more natural, and it's really helped us as a team, especially in the heat when your brain can be a bit, you know, fuzzled up. So it's been really good. Yeah.
And how have you taken that experience to your own game? Because I think you mentioned it already, and if I think of you bowling at the top of your mark, I think you let out a puff of air just before you bowled it. So what is that about? Is that just about trying to engage your brain more, or just release that anxiety that you might be feeling?
It feels like a reset button for me, because no matter how many balls I've bowled or how well I've bowled or whatever it is, there's always like doubts in my head, and I think that's just natural with any professional athlete, like those concerns always going to come in and outside of your head. And I think the main thing is not to push them away or anything, like just accept they're there. So for me, it's kind of like I kind of have like a routine now where I get to the top of my mark and I say something in my head, and then I visualise, look at the stumps, and then I take a deep breath, and then I have that routine every time at the top of my mark. So even though the thoughts in my head might be different per game, it might be better, it might be worse, that stays consistent. And now, like, it's weird because if I don't take a breath of air at the top of my, it feels really weird and I feel a bit tense, and it's a really nice kind of reset for me, and it doesn't push anything away, it more just kind of calms it a little bit, and it's like it's my trigger to go, okay, I'm ready to bowl the next ball, which I love doing now. And they're probably a bit deeper with each ball in this heat. By the end of my 4 hours on there, having a really deep breath. But yeah, it's been working really well for me.
And was that something that you worked out yourself, or did you work with a coach to identify? Because batters have triggers, don't they? They have their processes and routines that they work through. Is that, was that a trial and error thing for you?
It was, yeah, because I think I used to have routines when I was younger, but I probably had too much going on, and it felt like, and sometimes like if I couldn't do the routine, I felt anxious, which you don't want to be doing, because you've got to be adapting all the time. Like if you want to rush a batter or you want to do anything, like you've got to be able to adapt. So I found this way was kind of the best way of having a little short reset for me, but also not, you know, too long and overthinking it too much. And obviously we worked on a lot of breathing at the SWAC 2 thing, and I actually found it quite calming. And I think I just started to do it instinctively. And then when I wanted to get a routine, I was like, okay, I would visualize, breathe, and like have a cue in my head what I say to myself. And then it's like, and now it's just like normal. So yeah, it's probably a mixture of like, you know, WAC 2, speaking to my psychologist, and also just figuring out what works for me as well.
Yeah, a bit of trial and error.
Yeah.
Right, let's look ahead to your next game then. It's Scotland. If you win it, from what I gather, I don't think it automatically makes you qualify for the semis, but it puts you in a good position. What sort of prospect do you think there'd be?
I haven't thought about it too much, which I think is a good thing. I think for us, we're just trying to keep taking it up a notch. Obviously, we want to play to the best standard we can to inspire and entertain people. And I think we've been doing that gradually. Obviously, like I said, the first game probably wasn't our best, like in terms of it was a little bit scrappy. But I think those wins are also really important, learning when to win when it's really tough conditions out there. Like Danny was smoking them and it was just plugging in the ground. They were running really hard and it got a bit tougher when the ball got a bit softer. Whereas, you know, the second game, it was actually a bit of a nicer pitch. So it's kind of turning up with no preconception of what the pitch might be. It's being able to adapt in the moment, which I think we've been really focusing on. So, you know, ahead of Sunday, you know, we've got ideas of what the pitch might be like. It could be like the first game or the second game, but I think it's just being able to turn up with an open mind and not looking too far ahead and just playing what's in that moment. And obviously Scotland, it's really exciting for them to kind of be a part of it. And I think, you know, they've got a bunch of talented players. So I think, you know, just keep taking each game as it comes, really.
Yeah. And just finally, have you been keeping an eye on the other group? Obviously, the Aussies, it's getting pretty tight there. I think it's Australia, India and New Zealand who are going to be battling it out. How much have you been keeping an eye on that?
I'll be not going to lie, not a lot. I've barely watched any cricket since I've been out here. Like, if there's some highlights on, I'll put it on. Yeah. But personally, I've not been watching too much because there's just a lot of cricket going on and I just want to focus on us. But I'm sure it's very competitive there on their side of things. And you know what World Cup's like, it can be the anxiety, the stress of it. It just makes it a lot more, I guess, exciting to watch. So I'm sure I'll probably tune in the next few games. I will tune in at some point, I promise. But yes, that should be good.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for your time. I know you've just been to the gym and now you've got training, so we do appreciate it.
No, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Sarah Glenn, chatting along with Lydia Greenway. Lydia, you she sounded in pretty good form. I have to say, though, I wrote this down, something that she said. Got it on this piece of paper here, which is actually something that my daughter printed out for her art. This phrase that England, Lauren Bell said it the other day.
I know what you're going
to
say.
Yeah, exactly. Lauren Bell said it the other day, and Sarah Glenn has just said it here. They want to play their best cricket so they can inspire and entertain people. That's what she came out with as well. Is this something that has been drilled into every single member of the England women's team, that they have to get this phrase in with any interview that they give? I smile about it. It's a little bit like a get out of jail free, sort of like, you know, well, we did 16 things wrong in this last game, but we want to play our cricket to entertain and inspire people. I'm like, come on, guys, really?
Do you know what I thought you were actually going to say? I can't remember if she said it in the interview or not, but when I was speaking to Danny White earlier, I was doing an ICC feature piece, and they keep using the word sexy. They say, oh, well, our wins might not be sexy, but a win's a win, and it's been cracking me up. But anyway, it was great to chat to Sarah Glenn.
I will say there is something that And look, maybe this is the old school, this is maybe a generational thing, and I apologise for sounding old and grumpy, and I mean, I don't, because I am, but she's saying she doesn't watch a lot of cricket, she's not watched a lot of games and stuff, and I understand, you're playing in, it's a high intensity environment, you explain, you tell me you played in World Cups, I haven't. But I've played in tournaments.
Yeah.
And part of me, I'm not saying I have to sit in front of the telly and watch every game that's going on in the World Cup. Of course you shouldn't. Absolutely, you need time off. You need to mentally relax. You need to physically relax and do your own thing. And absolutely 100%. I might be tempted to just watch one or two bits, though. I might be tempted to watch Australia's batters. I might be, who are we coming up against in the next game? Right, well, let's see how X plays. Well, there's someone, or let's see how Y plays. I know they've got coaches and analysts and stuff like that. But I, as a cricketer, as a bowler, I might be looking at, you know, Australia and sort of saying, oh, well, you know, on these surfaces, she's playing the sweep a little bit more, or the, or the reverse, or she goes over the top inside out. Here's the lines of... And that worried me a little bit. She said she'll watch a little bit more, and this is not an attack on Sarah Glenn. Of course it's not. But it just seems to me that that in this sort of generation, you know, they're allowing the coaches to do that and them to potentially tell her, I'd be watching. I would be watching a little bit more.
Yeah. It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because I remember in my playing days, I know someone like Charlotte Edwards or Anya Shrubsole, if you've got a day off, you know they are plonking themselves in front of that television and watching whatever cricket is going on. It might not even be the tournament that they're playing in. But yeah, you do get players who just, as you say, want to switch off. And I suppose they have the luxury now of, say, Glenn wanted to see the top seven of the Australian batters. She can go to Chris Sykes, who is their analyst, and just say, look, I want to see everything that you just said. But your point is irrelevant. Who am I to say about your points? But I agree with your point on the fact that there's nothing that can beat learning yourself. So, and I think I feel like that's what you're saying is actually...
Yeah, you're right. But you are right. And maybe, like I say, maybe it's a personality thing. And I'm not saying that my way is the right way. Absolutely not. I've never been there. So I can't speak from any kind of experience on that front. But it's just one of those things that I just sort of twigged as well. And just sort of went, you know, if I had the opportunity, I might just have a look at the way that Annabelle Sutherland's batting, or the way that that's, you know, at least Barry is back. And I know you can see a lot of these, but it's just, I don't know. It's not a complaint. It's not a criticism whatsoever. It's just one of those things that sort of made me sort of, my ears pricked up a little bit. And, well, I don't know if I'd do that. But anyway, be that as it may. England are in a very good competition. Right, let's look ahead. I think the one game really that actually in all of the groups, because the World Cup is going kind of the way that we thought it would do in Group A. Wasn't quite sure who'd win the England-South Africa. I was leaning towards England, but they have won that. South Africa have been dominant. In the other games, I can't see them losing against... who's their next game? South Africa. I've just seen it. New Zealand... South Africa. They've got one more game to play, and Bangladesh.
Yes.
They're not going to lose against Bangladesh. I have no doubts that they are going to finish in second place. I can't see the West Indies beating England. I really can't. I think that's the way, as we expected, Group B to match up. India versus Australia. That is the game that is really going to separate. If India manage to win, then you're going to have potentially three sides with three victories, with Australia beating New Zealand, and if New Zealand have beaten India, and if India can beat Australia, that can really then throw a cat amongst the pigeons, and a lot of net run rate will be getting worked out in due course. Again, though, I don't know. I just can't see it. I can't see India beating Australia. Australia looks so, so good, Lid.
They do. And honestly, I did their game the other night with the BBC guys, and I have to admit, Daggers, they are an unbelievable sporting team. And talk about the best cricketing team in history in terms of what they've won. But you would put them in the greatest sporting teams of all time because they've been so dominant. But Yeah, the one area of weakness that they have showed is in that first game, they were pretty, rusty in the field. And then a couple of half chances also went down in the field as well, which you would sometimes expect, or you would expect the Australians to take it. The question is, how do you beat Australia? Because you look down at their batting order and you think, gosh, they just keep coming. Sophie Molyneux, who can open the batting, has opened the batting before, 10. Batting at number 10.
Eight, nine, ten. The other day was Talia McGrath, Annabelle Sutherland, and Sophie Molyneux. I know. And I'm going, this is like cheating.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so deep.
Yeah, it's crazy, but they do just keep coming at you. And I think the one thing, if you are England and if you do come up against Australia, whether it's the semis or the final, you're thinking, we've beaten them before. Obviously, that most recent series that they had when they were over here for the Ashes. So you have to take that and think, right, they are human and we can do it. But at the moment, they just look so, so strong. And
so many bowling options. Yes. So many batting options. I mean, like I say, batting down to 10 when Molyneux's coming in at 10. I think it's cheating. I think he needs to put some proper tail enders in there. But then you look at all of the bowling options you have. The spin of, you know, Wareham and Molyneux and Megan Schuster, I knew would be so horrible. She's an idiot to play at the best of times. On a pitch with no pace, with her swing and her accuracy, what did she go, like 3 for 3 the other day against New Zealand or whatever it was? Yeah. Oh, that's what she was at one point. She might have lost another run. But if I'm going to find that, so I'm not wrong.
No,
she was 3 for 3 off 3.2. Horrible. Molyneux, Sutherland, Gardner, Wareham, McGrath, and you could bowl Elise Perry if you wanted to. She hasn't had to. The only people who are not potentially bowl, Phoebe Litchfield won't bowl. I was pleased Grace Harris played. I think she should play. And I think she is someone who should keep it up. But you could have bowled Grace Harris, you could have bowled Elise Perry, and then the other three don't really bowl. But it's it's a wonderful looking side. So Australia take on India. That will have a lot of ramifications for Group A.
Yeah.
If Australia win, I cannot see New Zealand losing another game against Sri Lanka, who have been a huge disappointment to me.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about that. And I think that's how the games, I think it's good. If India do not beat Australia, Australia will finish top. New Zealand will finish second. In the other group, England will finish top. South Africa will finish second.
Yeah.
It will be England-New Zealand semi-final, South Africa versus Australia semi-final. And I can't actually see it being anything other than Australia-England final. Anyway, that's just my opinion. A couple of things just finally, Lydia, as an overview so far in this Women's World T20. A couple of things I wanted to talk to you about. I think Sri Lanka have been hugely disappointed. Really, after what we've seen over the last 12 to 18 months, I think they've really flattered to deceive. I don't think anyone was expecting a great deal of Scotland, and if honest, Bangladesh and Pakistan, given their form leading into these things. But Sri Lanka, they were, as we spoke prior in our preview, we were expecting them to upset one or two, and they have come nowhere near.
No, they haven't. They just looks as if, I think when you play in bilateral series, you know you have breathing space. You know that if you've got a series of three games, you're a little bit more relaxed and you go out there, you play with more freedom. But I think as soon as you rock up to a World Cup, there is a shift mentally in how you approach games, and you can do it successfully if you're trained and you're honed in dealing with high-pressured games and must-win games, which the big teams are. But for South Africa, they haven't been, and that showed, I think, just that lack of ability to perform when it matters, really, which is a shame. And, you know, you mentioned Scotland, like, they've actually played some good cricket at times. And I'm always mindful of sounding patronising, but I think the one thing that they will walk away with from this tournament is so many experiences of playing the best teams in the world and They've got some brilliant people involved, Sue Strachan, their manager, who I chat to whenever I see her in the hotel. And they've got so many good people trying to do good things. And as ever, they just need more investment and more resources. And it's the same with the likes of Bangladesh as well. But yeah, just to finish on Sri Lanka, they have been, yeah, probably the biggest. It's just a shame, isn't it? Because they've been playing really such good cricket.
And I'm sure they are as frustrated as anyone, but they really haven't looked anything like the side that I thought that they could have been, especially in conditions that they're playing out in Dubai. Just overviews as well, Lydia. One thing that has disappointed me a little bit now, and you might be able to put a finger as to why, but the standard of fielding out in this first week and a half has left a bit to be desired, I have to say. The catches that have gone down, the ground fielding has been... Now, is there a reason behind that? Is it the heat and the humidity and that sort of stuff, and or the outfields being slow or whatever, you know, from the ground fielding perspective? I mean, what have you made of it?
There was a debate about the lights at the different stadiums. So at Sharjah, they've got the traditional floodlights.
And the ring of fire at Dubai City.
I've spoken to a few players and they say, actually, the ring of fire lights it's easier because the ball's coming out of one bulb, basically, whereas with the floodlights, the ball's coming out of, I don't know, hundreds of light bulbs. If I'm honest, if I was to say a reason, I think it would be the heat. I think players just unable to reorientate themselves mentally or, I don't know, switch on properly. I'm not too sure. But, yeah, it's certainly the worst I've seen in a World Cup, which is a real shame. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you've got any theories on it, but that would be mine.
I really don't. And hence why asking you, and A, being the food, because I had hands like feet when I was grazing down at third or fine leg. But, you know, you having experienced and being one of the best fielders in the world, and I was sort of like thinking, why is this happening? Because we watch women's cricket sort of day in, day out around the world. We're lucky to do so, and we don't see it. We don't see the standard being what we've seen, and it frustrates, and it's always one of those excuses for morons on social media to go, catches go down in the men's game too. So anyway, be that as it may. We've still got lots to look forward to. My God, 40 minutes has just gone past so quickly. Carry on.
I've just got one more bit of news, Daggers, which has just come out today, actually. And it's actually really sad. So I don't know, have you seen that? Yeah,
about I've just seen it, yeah.
Yeah, so Fatima Sana's dad sadly has passed away, the Pakistan captain. So she's had to go home. Muniba Ali's going to fill in for her. I don't know if she will come back or not, but that's not a nice note to finish on. But I didn't know if I had time to squeeze it in or not, but I thought we should do.
Absolutely. And unless I sort of edit you, because I do the editing, so I can edit as much of you as I like. No, you're absolutely right. And our condolences to Fatima Sana and her family. I can't think that she would be back, and I imagine that she wouldn't be. And so, obviously, yes, but that is the only bit of news, really, that has come out. Overall, I've thoroughly enjoyed watching, even though there are some times where you as a commentator and a supporter of the game want to tear your hair out and go, what are you doing? It's horrible watching from back home.
I can imagine, Daggers.
But let me tell you, we've got lots more to come in this Women's World T20. It all happens very, very quickly. Not many group games left, and then we are into the semi-final. So you look after yourself, Lydia Greenway.
Here's
Don't
you
go
too.
Bike riding in the heat. Do something, maybe a pool. Just throwing that out there. You know, water.
Yeah, good idea, Daggers. A bit of common sense prevailing.
Yeah. Well, it was, you know, I couldn't believe it. You've gone for a bike ride. Anyway, thank you so much for your company. We will podcast again soon. Probably, I would imagine, pre-semi-final, something like that. But I don't want to commit Lydia Greenway just because she is working very, very hard out there for numerous different people. So fingers crossed you'll be available, Lyd, and we can preview the semi-finals. But for all of you listening or watching on our YouTube channel, we shall see you next time.